Birth, Chapter 13. Oh, I'm glad we're here. My butt is numb, said Kyle as they came around the gate to the abandoned airstrip where they tested their fastest ideas, far from the prying eyes of other street racers. They both were shocked. There, sitting in dazzling glory, was a brand new G7 private jet. That's really bigger than I thought one would be, said Dick. That's a what kind of plane? That's a G7. Very expensive stuff. Those winglets and the extra center tanks means it's a transcon version. Transcon? Able to go across the pond. Long-range version, maybe 8,000 miles. Dick whistled. How much does one of those run? Well, it depends on the electronics, but at least 10 million. Okay, so tell me why a $10 million jet is sitting on our runway with nobody around. Kyle laughed as he unbuckled his harness and opened the passenger door. He slid his laptop onto the seat and stepped onto the tarmac. It was cracked concrete, but relatively smooth. The whole place looked like a scene out of Duke Nukem, but they had made good use of the old abandoned airstrip with an 11,000-foot runway. Isn't possession 9/10 of the law? Yeah, nice try, Your Honor. I think that little wreath on the door might say something. Dick leaped out and ran over to where the air stairs would come down. I make this to be United States Secret Service. He started to back away in a slight state of panic. He started to look around for a sniper somewhere. Hey, Kyle, what is that? What is what? That, Dick pointed to the north at the small black craft coming straight for them about 100 feet off the ground like a bat out of hell. Shit, I don't know. That's a Black Hawk helicopter. Run! They both ran for the short tower room. This airstrip never had an active tower. It was for test pilots and training during the Korean War and was used during the Vietnam era. It was faded white concrete to keep the brutal desert sun from roasting the people inside. Once the sun hit the mountains in the late afternoon, it was quite nice. The upper desert would cool down to a comfortable and dry 80 degrees, even in the summer. As they reached the door, the black craft was on them. It was so fast and so quiet and never fired a shot. It quickly landed, and two men in suits came running out and toward the building. United States Secret Service, shouted Smith. Show your hands and come out slowly. Kyle and Dick emerged from the old building like they had been caught trespassing on an abandoned amusement park. Hey, guys. Nice jet, said Dick. Who are you? Asked Jones, holding his jacket open so he could reach his firearm. Hey, I'm Richard Daring, and this is my partner in crime, Kyle Kramer, said Dick. Ha, I said crime. I meant he's my technician. He's an engineer, sort of. Richard Daring. Dick Daring? Asked Bette, running up from behind the two agents. The race car driver? Yeah, that would be me. Why? Guys, this is Dick Daring. He's world famous. Well, he was, said Bette. She was jealous, sort of. She always wanted to drive race cars, but settled for riding Harleys instead. Judging from the scar and patch over Dick's right eye, she had made the right decision. So far. What are you doing here? Asked Smith. What are we doing here? What are you doing here? Squeaked Kyle. He had been silent on the edge of panic up to this point. This is our airstrip. Well, we use it to test cars for a long time now. You're trespassing, he said, pointing his freckled finger at Smith from 20 feet away. So we are, said Smith. So we are. We actually need to be leaving now. So we would appreciate it if you didn't know we were here. Where? Said Dick. I didn't see anything. Did you see anything, Kyle? Me? No. Rhino, put the boxes in the tail cargo area, please, said Jones without turning around. He still didn't trust these two. He did look at the car, though. Nice car. Thanks, they both said at once. Sir, we need 10 minutes to pre-flight, said the pilot of the helicopter who was now preparing to fly the jet. You have 5, said Smith. The two uniformed men turned with their clipboards and began checking the plane. One opened the door and dropped the air stairs. He slipped up the stairs and into the plane. What are you guys doing out here? Well, we sort of had to get out of town fast, and we use this strip to test cars. We have a lab and some equipment back here. Back here in this bungalow, said Dick. What kind of lab? Asked Jones. He was curious. These two looked like grease monkeys, but they didn't sound like one. We experiment with magnetically aligned nitrous oxide for enhanced fuel systems, blurted out Kyle while looking around at Dick. He hoped he wasn't giving anything away, but it was the Secret Service, and they did ask. The co-pilot emerged from the cabin. Sir, we have a problem. Report, please, ordered Smith. There is chatter from Edwards. They're scrambling 2A-10s. Sir, they have launch codes. Rhino, are those boxes aboard? Yelled Jones. Yes, sirs, said Rhino. The A-10s. Hold on, stuttered Kyle. He ran for the Dodge and retrieved his laptop. Hey, I'm still up. Give me a second. His hands flew over the keyboard, and in a few seconds, he yelled out, I got him. You got what? Remember, we talked about specifics, said Dick. A-10s. They're old. I hacked one once. I hacked their flight deck. I can hack their flight deck, said Kyle. Sir, we have to go low and fast to stay under radar, but we have to fly right over Edwards for the shortest route, said the pilot as he walked up with his electronic clipboard. What about going over them? Asked Smith. Well, our ceiling's 55,000 in this jet. Edwards controls all the way up. Up to where? Well, all the way, sir. Why can't you go higher? Asked Bet. Oxygen. There's no oxygen. Engines flame out, spouted Kyle. Basically, that's right, said the pilot. I can fix that. I can make this work, said Kyle as he began typing on his laptop again. Dick, the engines are GE, right? Let me check, said Dick, running up to the front of the port engine. Yes, General Electric, it says here. I can do this. We have the stuff. Can you fit two bottles in the cargo hold? Well, there's plenty of room in there, said Rhino. Come on, come with me, said Dick. The group ran to the bungalow about 50 yards away. Dick spun the combination and opened the roll-up door. There were about 20 bottles of various types of compressed gas. These two, get these two. Careful, they're heavy, said Dick. Here's a dolly. Rhino grabbed the dolly and began wheeling the two bottles toward the jet's ready cargo hold. What size jets? Dick shouted out the door at Kyle. No jets. Grab the 3/8 line, squeaked Kyle, and get the drill. Dick grabbed the coils of 3/8-inch stainless steel lines and the proper compression unions and solenoids to make up the injection system. He was mapping the system in his mind, but the bulk of the work had to be done inside Kramer's crazy brain. Too little, and the engine floods and flames out. Too much, and they turn into a pretty firework in the sky. We're going to need a battery, too. The jet runs on a 24-volt system, said Kyle. Hey, Bet. Grab that deep cycle battery over there. He didn't know why he asked her to get the battery. Just something told him by looking at her that she wouldn't say no. She didn't. They all headed for the jet. Grab a ladder, will you? Dick pointed to Jones. Within 20 minutes, they had the bottles jammed into the back of the jet along with the battery for the solenoids and a spool of wire to make the connection inside the cabin. Dick drilled a hole through the side of the outer skin and routed the stainless steel line through the hole. The pipes fed directly through the side of the engine cases just behind the compressor of each motor. Kyle was still jamming away on the laptop, which he had now transferred to a swivel seat in the cabin of the G7. Hey, guys, we have an update, yelled Kyle. I'm into the flight deck of the A-10s. They have no orders. What? Asked Smith. They have no orders. They are climbing out, and that is the end of the string. But they have launch codes for 2 Hellfire missiles each. Hellfires? Damn. They plan on catching us on the ground. This is standard tactical protocol. No orders until you're airborne. We have to leave, people, said Smith. What do you mean, people? We're not going, said Dick, pointing back and forth to Kyle and him. If you don't go... You die, understand? Why? What did we do? you saw, you die. You go with us, you have a chance of living, said Smith. Well, since you put it like that, I guess we're going with you. Hand me that wrench, will you? Guys, they're rolling. Canopies up, said Kyle. Sir, we have completed our pre-flight. We're ready, said the pilot to Smith, turning to recheck the cargo area. Dick and Rhino came crawling out. Noticing the stainless steel line coming out of a neat hole in the side skin and going into the engine casing, the pilot shouted, "What the hell did you just do?" Facing Smith, he said, "Sir, I have no idea how this is going to affect the aircraft." "Don't worry about it, Cap," said Dick. "Everything is under control." "Oh, yeah? Whose control?" "His," said Dick, pointing to Kyle, chewing on a pencil while flying over the keyboard of his laptop. "Okay, let's go," said Smith. They bounded up the air stairs and hauled in and secured the door. "Spool up, men. We're wheels up in 1 minute." "Sir, I do not have the flight plan into the computer yet. We'll have to do it once we're airborne," said the co-pilot. "There's weather or something. I can't get a clean arrival time, no matter what I do." Okay, we'll do it in the air. Take off and head east," said Smith. "East? We can't go east. That will put us on an intercept with Edwards," said the pilot. "Sit down and belt in, people. We're rolling," ordered Smith. The engines began spooling up, and the jet rolled forward to taxi to the south end of the runway. There would be no clearance needed. This was truly visual flight rating. Fly by the seat of your pants, combat-style flying until they got out of range of the A-10s. Still, the G-7 had to roll nearly a mile to the south to be able to take off, and there were plenty of foreign material like sticks and tumbleweeds along the way, so the engines had to be kept at low speed to prevent vacuuming up something into the engine. Besides, blowing a tire by running over a sharp edge of old concrete would also be a disaster. "Those A-10s are closed cockpits now. They're launching," said Kyle. "How does he know that?" asked the co-pilot. "He hacked their flight deck," said the pilot as he put his headset on and began surveying his own flight deck. "Captain, if we take off and stay close to the mountains, going north, we could make it to Palmdale and get lost in the commercial traffic." "That's a good idea. We could stay on the deck over the Angeles National Forest right here and then bank east along 14. It's possible." Just then, Smith poked his head into the cockpit. "Here's the deal. Those A-10s have armed Hellfire missiles, heat seekers. They also have 30mm cannons, which can rip this plane like paper mache. The only thing they can't do is climb. They're slow and heavy, like a flying trash can. We have to make sure they can't get an angle on us." "And how do we do that?" "We have mountains to the west, Lancaster to the north, and the only opening we have is right here along 14 to 18. They have an angle, no matter how fast we fly." "We can do about 375 at this altitude," said the pilot. "If those A-10s get airborne now, there is no way we can make it," said the co-pilot. Okay, stuttered Kyle as his brain came out of hacker mode. He twisted his reddish blonde hair in his left hand while his right hand brushed across the pad on his laptop. "Here's your flight plan," yelled Kyle from his swivel chair through the open cockpit door. The pilot looked back at his flight deck. "What the hell? What is this?" he yelled back over his shoulder. Smith winced at him as the pilot had yelled right in his face. It's the flight plan. We could beat the A-10s and the Hellfire missiles if we follow this plan, I'm pretty sure," said Kyle sheepishly. "This ain't no video game, kid. This jet cannot fly like this. This plan makes us fly straight up. We can't go vertical." "It can now," said Dick. "Just do it." "We will stall and fall back to the ground. I don't feel like dying today," said the pilot. "I was looking over his shoulder, sir," said Jones. "He's way too fast for me, but I think it might work." "Jesus Christ," the co-pilot redirected the plane onto the end of the runway. 11,500 feet of runway wide enough to launch a B-52 straight in front of them. He held the brakes as the plane stopped rolling. "They're wheels up, sir," said the co-pilot. "Okay, here we go. Get in your seats, you two. He picked up the mic. We're firewalling it. He had not flown this way since flying cargo runs out of Riyadh in 1991. 6,000 hours to end up like this. Dick and Kyle looked at each other as the jet lurched forward like a sports car. It was off the ground in less than 3,000 feet and wheels up. 200. 250. Pull back, said the pilot. Together they worked the yoke of the plane. They had practiced 60-degree elevations coming off the runway lots of times, but they had never done 90 degrees before. We're not fast enough, sir. Hold on. 300. 330. 350. That's good. We're at 6,000 now. 400. Holy shit. What is that? That's not them. What is that? Spat the pilot over the DCs. I think that's a news helicopter. Evasive right. Hold on. The pilot and co-pilot pulled back even more and guided the plane in a hard roll to the right. Whoa. He went right. He went right. That guy has combat experience. Very quick. We're clear, said the pilot. The plane came back to the center and was now climbing at a 75-degree angle. Sir, two bogeys at 320, said the co-pilot. I got them. They have an angle. They have an angle, and they're going to fire. Go, 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 wished the co-pilot. Now would be a good time, hacker boy, shouted the pilot. Pull up, pull up. 3, 2, 1, go, shouted Kyle as he pressed the F8 key. At that moment, the two jets released 4 Hellfire missiles. They dropped like bricks until the propellant ignited. They were AGM-114 heatseekers capable of reaching a speed of 950 miles an hour in level flight. The G7 could fly at nearly the speed of sound in level flight, but they were climbing. They were practically vertical now, slowing down as time went on. The plane did not have enough thrust to go straight up and accelerate at the same time. Kyle, asked Dick, hold on. Kyle, hold on. I couldn't do anything till they dropped. Hold on. I'm going to have to dive to pick up airspeed. We're going to... Holy mother of God, said the pilot as he gripped the yoke with all his might. The plane's GE engines were being doused with magnetized nitrous oxide. This mixed perfectly with the clean Jet A kerosene fuel and produced a beautiful blue afterburning behind the jet. The passengers squeezed back in the seats while they gripped their armrests. 400, sir. 500, 650, 750, Mach 1.1, Mach 1.2, Mach 1.5, settling out, sir. Sir, we just passed 50,000 feet. Stay vertical, follow the flight plan. We have about 3 more minutes of boost, said Kyle. The oxygen masks dropped out of the ceiling. Nearly panicking, each person grabbed for a mask and put it on. The co-pilot was not so lucky. His mask fell behind him as they were pointed straight up. Within 15 seconds, he was unconscious. We're at 75,000 feet and still climbing. We're safe. I'm nosing over for level flight, said the pilot over the mic. No, shouted Kyle. If you do that, we will explode. I cannot turn the nitrous off. It must run out. 100,000 feet. Hey, we're stalling. I need some help here. Dick released his belt as the plane began to feel very strange. He floated free of his seat and launched weightlessly toward the cockpit. He's out. He needs oxygen or he'll die, said the pilot. Kyle popped his harness loose and grabbed his weightless body and threw it back toward Rhino. Get a mask on him and belt him in. You the man, shouted Rhino through his oxygen mask. He grabbed the weightless co-pilot with one arm and slammed him into the seat next to him. He attached the seatbelt and put the dangling oxygen mask over his unconscious face. Oh my God, said Loretta. Look. She hadn't made a sound during this entire flight. But now she was looking out the window of this jet from 100,000 feet. She could see the curvature of the Earth. She could see the curvature of two Earths. One was holographic looking, but it was separating from the white and blue planet they called home. Her thesis was right. There were two Earths, one vibrating at a much higher frequency than the other. They were in harmony, for the most part, for more than 5,000 years. But now, just as her measurements and calculations had predicted, they were becoming dissident. The two worlds were going to come apart. It was like the planet was dying. Just like a human body dies. The physical part is temporal and slow and solid. The spiritual part was fast and, as far as she could tell, eternal. The planet called Earth was a living thing. Dick had the best view for a moment. The enhanced optics out the cockpit windows made the picture absolutely stunning. He couldn't blink. It was beautiful. Wow, was all that came out of his mouth. I know it's awesome and everything, but we have a serious problem, said the pilot. He had the yoke wrapped all the way over the right as far as it would go, and he pushed it all the way forward. The plane, however, was beginning to fall backwards and spin to the left. Slowly. But the altimeter began spinning. We got almost no airspeed. We're going into a flat spin. These jets glide like a brick, and I'm going to need some help with this elevator. Help me push it down. Dick grabbed the yoke. Felt like a steering wheel. Two pedals. One goes right, one goes left. What does this do? He asked. That's the landing gear. Don't touch that. And this? Reversers. The engine cowl directs the jet blast to slow the plane down once it reaches the ground. So leave that alone or you'll kill us all. And these? Those are the engine throttles. Come on now, help with this or we're going to spin out of control. The plane was dropping fast at about 2,000 feet a minute. 2,500. Once the stratospheric air began moving over the wings backwards, there would be no correcting it. They would spin so fast they would pass out, and the plane would soon shatter under the stress. Dick grabbed the wheel hard and pushed in left into the spin. He reached forward and dropped the landing gear and then opened the reverse cowls on both engines. All that was remaining was to, the pedals, push the right one all the way to the floor. The plane rolled upside down. The horizon came back into view and disappeared over the top of the cockpit window. Throttles. He reached for the throttles and shouted to the pilot, light it up, light it up. The pilot pushed the glow plug switches to light the engines. The compressors began turning. They could hear the ignition of the port engine and the light went green on the flight deck. We have engine one, said the pilot. Dick centered the yoke and pulled back slightly. He let up on the pedals and let them come to the center with the rudder. He closed the reversers and raised the landing gear. We have number two. Throttle up. 450. 550. 750. Okay, we have to level out and glide a little. These aren't made to fly too much past Mach 1. They both sat there for a moment. They realized at the same time that they were going to live. The plane was saved. Come around at 320. We're going to Camp David, said the pilot. How did you know how to do that? I've never faced that before. Dick turned his face to meet the pilot's and pointed to his patched eye. Try crashing every night, he said flatly.